everyone. As Dan said, today I want to talk briefly about some of the chemical characterization methods that we use and how we can relate this to our plant growth response parameters that we see. And just briefly about FBS, we are a life science company with a focus on improving crop yield and plant health, and I certainly don't need to tell this audience about any benefits of humic substances or dissolved organic matter in the field, so I will move directly on. The first thing I want to discuss is that FBS uses a dissolved organic matter-based product. We sell it alone, and we sell it in a micronutrient line. But essentially, what I first and upfront want to hopefully convince you is that we understand that our product works. We are seeing enhanced plant health and through crop yields, but we're not entirely sure, obviously, of its mode of action. That's the big question still within the industry. This is a slide basically showing 7 years worth of field trials, many of which are third party, on a wide variety of crops. And these are averages across soil, seed, and foliar applications. Globally, we have a lot of trials in North America, South America, as well as in Asia. So, first off, what I want to discuss is what is this dissolved organic matter that we're using, and potentially, along this presentation, understand a little bit better as to why it's working. So dissolved organic matter, as opposed to a traditional humic acid or fulvic acid, in that it is still a complex mixture of components. It varies from source to source, and being ubiquitous in the environment, whether it's isolated from aquatics or from soil or sediment or even from aerosol organic matter, the composition will change rapidly. Again, it's not 1, 10, or even 100 components, it's thousands, if not tens of thousands of different components that are all mixed together and have a lot of individual properties. You can separate out a dissolved organic matter sample into its fulvic and humic portions. We use the whole as is. And in general, characterization, and as we've discussed this morning, it can be very difficult to understand molecular structure or molecular level details of these various types of dissolved organic matter. So up front, what I want to do is basically show you the instrumentation that we use. I don't want to focus on the instrument background or its function, but basically how we apply it to our types of environmental samples. And then I'll segue into some of our field trials or bioassay testing using corn, as well as a recent hydroponic study that we did using rice. And then if I have about a minute or two at the end, I can discuss some of the multivariate statistical approaches that we also use to understand our product and correlate it to plant growth. So first up, we'll discuss the methodology. Our lab employs a wide variety of techniques. We do dissolved organic carbon concentrations, atomic absorption spectroscopy to measure metals. We do a lot of other spectroscopy, UV vis and fluorescence, FTIR. But today I want to focus on the molecular level characterization that we do using this instrumentation at Old Dominion University. And here's a picture of it, so you can kind of get an idea for scale. It's not just a benchtop instrument, it's standalone. I'm standing next to it there so you can see the scale. There's the mouse. Here is the electrospray ionization source here. And this is occurring at ambient temperature and pressure. So we're forming ions under ambient conditions. This is a soft ionization technique. We're not fragmenting the sample like in a traditional GCMS or electron ionization. So after electrospray, we go through a flight line, and then ions are detected in the horizontal bore of a large cryogenic magnet. And we can measure frequency very accurately, and so therefore we can measure mass to charge very accurately and get molecular level details. So I'll walk you through briefly what some of the data looks like. And this is a broadband mass spectrum of an FBS DOM sample. And I know right off the bat it looks like a nice giant blob, but hopefully I will convince you here that we do have very high resolving powers. And as we start to zoom in, first we'll just zoom in a random region here at 450 to 500. We can start to discern some molecular level details. These wave-like motion that you observe is indicative of chain elongation. There's a 14 mass unit separation, which is CH2. You may look at this and say, okay, you've got a peak per nominal mass. But actually, if we continue to zoom in, now you can start to see the resolving powers really come out. And what you can see here is that we're not looking at one peak per nominal mass or one composition. We're looking at 10 to 20 different peaks individually resolved in a space of about 0.3 mass units. And this slide indicates that ions are singly charged. And again, I don't want to discuss too much about the actual instrument. If anyone is interested, I'm happy to talk at the break more about the instrumentation itself. But what's really important here is the resolving power. This data was acquired probably about 10 years ago. The original instrument was a quadrupole time of flight mass spectrometer in comparison to the FT-ICR. And you can see we have a two orders of magnitude improvement of resolving power. So if we finally zoom in one more time and we look at one nominal mass, here we've got about 15 to 20 peaks. And we do have mass to charge values for each peak. I just don't show all of them here for clarity. But essentially what I want to discuss is that because we can measure these things very accurately, we are measuring out to the fifth decimal place. And so with careful calibration, we can then use a molecular formula calculator and start generating actual formulas for each of these individual peaks. And basically, I don't want to focus on this table too much. I just want to show you this is one nominal mass. And if you extrapolate that to the entire mass range of about 200 to 800, we're ending up with about 4,000 formulas typically for a typical DOM sample. Depending upon biodiversity of your samples, there's a wide array of components that can be detected. So great, now we have spreadsheets and spreadsheets of all this data. What do we do with all of this? What I want to point out here is the O:C and H:C atomic ratios, where basically if you take this 5 divided by 18, you have an H:C of 0.33. The oxygen to carbon ratio of 0.72. We plot these things on what is called a Van Creveland diagram, and this helps us understand and relate these formulas back to a potential biomolecular compound class. Out here at high O:C, these are tannin-like molecules. Here, more in the center of the region, these are lignin-like molecules, the standard biopolymer in wood. And out here are condensed aromatics that have a wide array of oxygen and carbon, but these are the more aromatic and chicken wire-like structures that we see. And so this is a sample of the dissolved organic matter that FBS produces. But I just basically want to show you what we can do with this type of plot. And this yellow square is simply to draw your eye to the center of the diagram. So it's the same on all of the plots I'll show you, so you can see the differences amongst different samples. And as we discussed earlier this morning, the IHSS has these reference standards that you can purchase and compare your results with anyone else in the world using this sample, because it is the same reference material that anybody can obtain. And these are just four different samples of, on the left here we have Suwannee River fulvic and humic acids. Suwannee River is an aquatic starting material in Georgia. On the right here we have a peat. This is Pahokee peat from the Florida Everglades. And the coal humic acid is leonardite from North Dakota. And you can see in the aquatic system, when you look at a fulvic acid versus a humic acid, what is flocculating out under these acidic conditions tends to have a much lower O:C. We lose a lot of these more highly polar compounds during flocculation of the aquatic humic. For the peat humic, now we can start to see that this void here in the middle is starting to occur. And this region is very lipid-like. Your long-chain fatty acids and waxes are up here. And then for a coal humic acid, we're going even further to the left, and the large abundance of formulas are in this low O:C, low H:C region of very aromatic components. Again, these chicken wire-like structures. And just to give you a little refresher, this is what the FBS DOM looks like. And this is acquired from an aquatic source, so I'm showing it next to the Suwannee River. And so now I want to basically, since I've shown you how we look at all this data, give you a couple examples of some of the work that we've done trying to understand how our DOM is actually affecting plant growth. So in this study, and this has been published, it's open access, anyone can acquire it. I'm also happy to email the PDF to anybody who would like it. The FBS DOM, what we first did was fractionated just by pH. So we got the acid-insoluble humic versus the acid-soluble fulvic. And then we further fractionated that fulvic material using a C18 resin, which basically splits it based on hydrophobicity. So what passes through the C18 is hydrophilic. It's very polar, very water-loving, versus what is bound to the retentate is your hydrophobic material. We fractionated this, characterized it, and then we did bioassay testing on corn. So here are our fractions. The fulvic looks very similar to the original whole sample that I had showed you, and just similar to what I showed for the Suwannee River, which flocculates out of solution. There's my mouse. Actually, we see a shift to a lower O to C, which is exactly in line with what we see with the Suwannee River. But what I really want to point out is this filtrate versus retentate, and this goes back to the hydrophobic versus hydrophilic fulvic portions that we were talking about this morning. Hydrophobic is down here. These are towards the center of the diagram. This is a very lignin-like region, whereas the filtrate that is very hydrophilic, again, we have these very highly polar, highly oxygenated compounds out in this tannin-like region. So once we isolated these, we did characterization. We did bioassay testing with, and I just want to focus on the hydrophobic versus hydrophilic here for in terms of time. But again, in the publication, we do go through all of the different samples. But basically what we did, we mixed the filtrate and retentate. We used the original samples as well as a mixture at 3:1 each way, as well as a 1:1 mixture to sort of simulate the original. Our control was just deionized water. And we did applications of 0.01 milligrams per liter carbon as well as 0.1 to get an idea of rate. 10 replicates for each treatment, and then at the end we did assessments in terms of root and shoot elongation, fresh biomass weight, and then the dried root and shoot weights. And here are some of the results that I want to point out. Just to get you familiar, the control is here. It's represented by this dashed line. This is the lower carbon rate, and the filtrate to retained ratio. So the 100 here, this means this was all filtrate, and then we go to the entire sample being all of the retentate, which is hydrophobic. So at this lower rate, what we see is an increase in dried root mass as we had more of this hydrophobic fulvic present. The opposite was true at 0.1 milligrams per liter. At the higher carbon rate, we saw just the opposite. As the hydrophilic material more was present, that gave higher roots. Masses. So we went back and looked at more of the data in terms of actual root lengths. And what we saw was that for those hydrophilic samples, basically they had a short root, a short primary root, but their overall root systems were heavier because they were more bulky. There was more secondary roots occurring in those samples. And so the main conclusion from this is, it's not just how much you're applying, but what type of carbon you're applying to the plants to get at these types of results. So the next thing we did was we did a hydroponic study using rice. And this is a very quick schematic of how we designed the experiment. We have three controls, essentially, where the first two, we have our dissolved organic matter just in the tray. There's no plants. One, it's just the sample, and then the second one has vermiculite, which is our substrate media. And these are just abiotic controls to see if anything is happening during time in terms of temperature, sunlight, any type of degradation that may occur. Systems 3 and 4, we have the rice growing. You can see our little seedlings here. System 3 is just rice grown in deionized water. And then 4 is where we've applied the biostimulant to look at the growth. And we basically just pool the liquid at our different time points over the course of 75 days to do characterization of the biostimulant and see how it's changing with time. First up, I'll show you very quickly that the biostimulant did work. We did have larger seedlings after 75 days when we took our measurements. The most statistically relevant was the shoot length, where we saw much longer shoots for the biostimulant presence as opposed to the rice and vermiculite control. But we did have longer roots, heavier roots, and shoots as well. So what did we see? On the left are the bulk measurements. And again, what we did was we pulled the liquid with time from the hydroponic solution to see if we could understand what the plants were taking up with time. And for system 1 and 2, those are our controls. There was no rice present. And we do see a slight decrease in the iron content as well as the carbon content with time in those controls, but it was much less significant than in system 4, where we could see that the rice was taking up the carbon as well as the iron significantly with time. When we did the FTIC-RMS analysis, our controls, again, very constant. We see hardly any change across average O2C and H2C ratios. But in system 4, when looking at what the rice seedlings were taking up, we see that the O2C is continuously decreasing and the H2C is continuously increasing here. So if we go back to our Van Creveland diagrams, basically we look here at just time 0 and time 75 days. And you can see here, all of these tannin-like components are practically gone by the time 75 days has occurred. We also lose a lot of the condensed aromatics, and then growing in are some of the more, aliphatic components. And so we have a lot of data here because we have 9 different time points for 3 different systems, and so that gives us 27 samples. And I can promise you no one wants to print out 27 Van Creveland diagrams and try and look at this data. So what's the next thing that we do? We do principal component analysis, which is a very nice tool to simultaneously highlight differences between the samples as well as explain what is causing the differences in the data set. So here's our principal component by plot. And again, just to show you controls 1 and 2, where the DOM biostimulant was present just under ambient conditions, looking for any differences that may occur due to photo or bacterial degradation. Whereas in system 4, we had our rice. And you can see our controls are all clustered over here together with a negative PC1, along with our time 0 and 2 day time points. So that highlights to us that the biostimulant was the same in all of these systems from the very beginning. But with time, you can see this strong trend with going to a higher PC1 score with time. So if we look at the variables, now we can see in this blue box, this is what is enriched in these control samples, as well as the original time points of system 4. Formulas that are in this green box are those that are enriched in the later time points of system 4, indicating these are what are left in solution that the rice appears to not take up. So plotting those, essentially now we have a very clear-cut picture. These formulas in blue are what the rice is taking up. All of these tannins and condensed aromatics are being used by the rice very quickly, and these more lignin-like and aliphatic components are what is being left in solution that the rice is not using. And on the right, basically just shows you the relative magnitude of that these peaks account for, showing you the decrease and increase. And what we basically draw from these conclusions, we know these highly oxygenated tannin-like compounds can act as siderophores and bind iron. And so what we think is happening are these are the components that are able to take these micronutrients in solution up through the roots for the plant utilization. I just have 2 slides to summarize here. The last thing that we do is statistical analysis with using Spearman's rank analysis. And this is how we get at understanding the composition of the organic matter with the plant response. So what essentially it does is it looks at these correlations between, say, the peak magnitude and a root length. And it plots it plots it linearly and gives you an R-squared value. What Spearman's rank analysis does is instead of using these absolute values, it plots it basically on a ranking measurement. And now we can see we have a much more significant correlation in the R-squared, and we can then plot these responses on the Van Creveland diagram and try and understand what is actually impacting our root length or our shoot length and things of this nature. And just a last slide here, some interesting ideas that we have now seen. This is just dry shoot mass, for example, but we use only bioassay data from seed treatments. Down here is soil, and over here is foliar. And this is in agreement with the hydroponic study, where basically these tannins and condensed aromatics are positively correlated with enhanced plant growth. But in a foliar treatment, similar to what we saw with our fractionation study, was that actually the opposite is true. And what we think is happening is these hydrophilic components at a foliar application may have a hard time getting into the plant on the hydrophobic leaf surface. And so that's another avenue we're currently exploring. And I'll leave up some implications for everybody and take any questions and discuss anything further at the break with anyone who's interested. Thank you.
Well, we're scheduled for a break now. Does anybody have a question they think everybody else in the room needs to could benefit from to ask Rachel? Oh, you went over here.
So you're actually saying that those plants are actively taking up those compounds?
We are saying that because we have controls where we know that it's not a bacterial or a photodegradation occurring, because those components are still present during the entire 75-day length of time. Whereas the difference where the rice is present, those compounds are disappearing from solution.
So do you think that the in the root, or do you think, or in the tissue, as you look at that, or do you think they're actually metabolized?
That is an excellent question that it would be difficult at best, because these are components, dissolved organic matter inherently is derived from degraded plant material. And so if we take these root systems or shoots and, you know, grind them up and do an extraction, we're going to see plant tissue and we're going to see these other components too that maybe we could differentiate, maybe we could not. Hard to say.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Bruce.
The DOM is an aquatic dissolved organic matter. I'm not allowed to say where it comes from. It's concentrated by a proprietary process, but essentially we do a process to concentrate the organic matter from a natural aquatic source.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Rachel.
Thank you.